Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway with Kent Embry here today, as well as Catherine Meckes. And they are going to be talking, of course, about the Community Foundation serving West Central Illinois and Northeast Missouri. And a lot of great things are happening with the Community Foundation all this morning. I've been talking about how Ralls County is almost to her $15,000 match to make get the $15,000 match then, so a $30,000 total from the Community Foundation. So let's start out with Catherine. Ralls County.
Yes.
Very close.
Very close, and they are very anxious to hopefully meet their match soon, because if they do, they will get to award their first grants this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're kind of looking at, you know, if they can get there this month, then we'll be able to squeeze them into our community grant program and keep that momentum rolling.
Okay. So if you're in Ralls County and you want to make a contribution, please do so as soon as possible. The $15,000 they raise in Ralls County will be matched by the Community Foundation, who will give another $15,000. And these county endowment funds have become popular. Ralls is just the latest to almost make it. What other counties have endowments?
Well, almost all of them, Mary. So in Illinois, we've got Adams, Brown, Hancock, and Pike that are rolling and have been for several years. And then in Missouri, we've got Lewis, Marion, Shelby, Monroe, and almost Ralls. So of our 12 counties, only Clark, Knox, and Pike, Missouri, are only three
that don't have it.
Yeah, Shelby has one as well.
Right. Shelby just got theirs.
That's right.
And Ralls is about to get theirs. And so those three counties that don't have them, is there interest in there, or just they're started but haven't made it yet, or have they not even started?
No, have not started. We've had conversations, and sometimes it's just making sure, because, you know, these counties, so the process goes, at least three individuals in that county have to organize to create a fund council to be in charge of the fundraising. And so getting the timing right, where we can get some leadership who has the time available to dedicate to the project, is what it takes. So, you know, we were always having conversations and planting those seeds, and we hope in the next year we can get rolling on those.
Well, and those are smaller counties with smaller populations. So, you know, finding those leaders, it's not hard. They're easy to identify.
They're just busy.
But they're very busy. They're doing everything else. So hopefully Ralls will join here, the group, just any minute now. And if you live in one of those counties not served by a county endowment fund, start thinking about how you might take the lead to make that happen. Well, we've got Kent Embry here today, and I guess he's going to do most of the talking this morning. Would that be the correct assumption?
I don't know. We can just all share the load. It's okay. It's okay. But I'm happy.
Catherine
to...
says, I hired you to take the load off me.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Kent, you're doing all the work this morning, okay?
I came up with Pike County, Missouri, I think, right?
Yeah, so you've already made a valuable contribution. Let's learn about Kent Embry, because you have been involved with not-for-profits for a big part of your life.
Yeah, a large part of my career here in Quincy, outside of my marketing business that I had years ago, has been working for organizations like the Salvation Army, Quincy Public Schools Foundation, and now the Community Foundation, which I enjoy very much because it has such a broad reach across 12 counties, you know, four in Illinois and eight in Missouri. So
you've upped your game as far as caring for even more people.
Exactly. And it, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting because I get to talk to a number of people every day from all different types of nonprofit services, you know, everything from human services to arts and culture and everything in between, really.
And your past experience helps, because being very knowledgeable about what the Salvation Army does, being very knowledgeable about what the Quincy Public Schools Foundation does,
mm-hmm.
you also then can see when, you know, things come up, you can say, oh, these things are happening in our community because of these places. They have endowments, Salvation Army, especially with the Community Foundation. So
mm-hmm.
it's important that we understand that this is not a competition to see, you know, the Salvation Army versus the YMCA. It's not that at all.
No.
It's a collection and repository for people who want to support their charity to be able to get the biggest bang for their buck. Because If I go out, little old Mary Griffith, and I say, I'd like to have a foundation, and I want to invest my money, and I only have $15,000, which is what it used to take to chart, people are like, I don't have time for you. But if I say I have $55 million, then they tend to perk up. And I also might get a little better rate of return on my investment. So
that's true. That's true. I think you're exactly right. There's, you know, there's a niche that each of the nonprofits in our area serves, and we by no means want to compete with any other nonprofits. We want to provide a service to them. So the endowment funds that we make available to private donors help do that. You know, many nonprofits are much smaller and do not want to manage an endowment fund or don't have the accounting expertise to do fund accounting and that type of thing. And, you know, that's one area that we can come in and say, well, you know, we can provide a mechanism for you to have a permanent endowment just through our agency funds.
Part of the umbrella. And then you don't have to, you can kind of set it and forget it. Once the criteria are established, you don't have to worry about, oh, the stock market went up, the stock market went down. What are bonds doing? What's this? What's that? Professional money management is watching over this multi-million dollar basket, which everybody has their own little bucket in the basket, you know.
That's right.
And,
That's right.
And you'll always get your money back. It's in perpetuity. But this is really an important aspect of trying to explain to people what the community foundation is. It still is a little bit harder. Ray Brummel, who is one of the first people on the Community Foundation, said, the United Way is like the checking account. The money comes in, the money goes out. It's for here, day-to-day needs. The Community Foundation is more like a savings account where you pull interest off of your savings account to help things today.
Mm-hmm.
But you know you'll always have the principal there for tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, every year, you know, we look at those earnings and our board evaluates, you know, what the spending level can be for that year. And the greater the growth of those funds, the more yield we have to give back to the community.
I was really excited last year. I don't know about this year. So far, not so good, but that's okay. Everything
for the long game, Mary.
It's for the long game. I know we're in the long game. So Kent Embry, let's talk about community grants, because this is the hardest part too. Really teeny tiny nonprofits that don't have any staff, they rely totally on volunteers. They're not fly by night. They're good people. They use the small amount of resource they have very wisely. They're extremely efficient because they don't have a penny to waste. But they're also probably the least capable of going out and seeking these grants from these big, you know, maybe foundation or something like that.
Right.
But they can get in with a grant process from the Community Foundation. And it's you're trying to make it as easy as possible, not to lower the bar on what they're trying to do, but just make it so that the average person doesn't have to have their PhD in professional fund development to navigate the process for approval. So talk a little bit about what's going on right now.
Sure. Yeah. Our community grant program is the most accessible program that we have because there are such a variety of funds that are available to kind of feed that program. And so what we've done is we make that accessible to, you know, the eligible organizations that we can make grants to. So 501c3 nonprofits. Other nonprofits may not have their 501c3 status, but they can use a fiscal sponsor that is a 501c3. Units of government, you know, one of our definitions of charity, I think, is to not remove but ease the burdens of government. So and then faith-based organizations as well. So churches that have charitable public projects that don't necessarily require participation in that religion, those kinds of projects are also eligible. So we make the community grant program accessible to all those organizations. And then the other side of it is kind of what you were describing before, is an educational process. So we've been working pretty hard over the past couple of years to figure out how can this program help address the capacity building that those smaller nonprofits need to do. And how can we use the budget that we have, you know, and the resources that we have to educate them, not only for this program, but in learning how to put things like financial statements and budgets together, for applying for other grants beyond just the Community Foundation grant that's available. So, you know, we have a financial workshop that's coming up through the Tri-State Area Fundraising Professionals. I believe that's April. It's the first. Yeah, it's early in April.
This is what Catherine is here for. Catherine has become the secretary.
Having
now.
The two of us together is helpful.
There's one brain here operating under two bodies.
So that financial workshop is we executed that at our office last year, and so we filled our whole office up with people, and it just had great response from the participants, and so. We talk about things like financial statements, which financial statement is appropriate for applying for grants. You know, how do you put your budget together? What should you include? Those kind of things. And there are other funders besides us use that information to help decide how stable and secure an organization is, whether they're actually doing best practices as far as accounting. You know, if they want to make a larger grant to them, they look at those kind of things. So we use our program as kind of an educational process as well to help those applicants learn the grant writing process.
Because some people will write a grant for $1,000 and that's what they need. Mm-hmm. And other people need $1 million. Mm-hmm. And so obviously the sophistication level when you get to the $1 million is different. Mm-hmm. And it should be. But, you know, you're not just giving out money willy-nilly. Oh, I'm Mary and I want to comb the hair of Cocker Spaniels because I've noticed how matted it is in the area. So give me $1,000. I'm going to go out and find a whole bunch of Cocker Spaniels with matted coats. That's not going to get you a grant from the Community Foundation.
Unless we had a fund that was for Cocker
matted
grooming.
Matted Cocker Spaniels? Okay.
Well, fair.
That's true.
If anybody out there is interested.
Yeah.
But, again, you make... The bar is appropriate for the amount of money that's being sought.
Right. And at the same time, you know, it is somewhat standardized in the application process, the reporting process. After you get that money, you know, the work that you go to follow up and make sure that you have accurately described and documented how the money was spent. You know, those are all best practices that any nonprofit can learn from. So even though our grants in this program max out at $7,500, you know, they're not the $50,000 or the $1 million grant. The process, I think, that small nonprofits can go through to learn, you know, a best practice for their grant writing and reporting and documentation is valuable.
Because the need is there. And so if they get a $7,500 grant and they meet the need, but the need is still there, they might be able to go somewhere else and apply for even more money, and they'll have the skills that are there. One thing that's interesting, general operating support, that is not sexy. A lot of times when folks have a fund drive, recently my church just had a fund drive to build this security wall down at our sister parish in Haiti. And oh, that's, you know, oh, it's definitely needed because, you know, the battle going on in Haiti and the guerrilla warfare and the secure, and it's, you know, again, it's kind of like a, ooh, call to action, immediate action needed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, keeping the lights on at the parish hall and making sure that, you know, the food supply is still there and maybe the pastor gets a truck every once in a while so we can go up in the hills to preach to people, those things aren't quite as sexy. And so general operating revenue is important. Every charity has got to buy paper and paper clips and have a phone line.
Mm-hmm.
And these things are very important. And again, people are, I mean, most people don't say we're having a fund drive to build a swimming pool. They don't say we're having a fund drive to buy 2 gallons of chlorine or to have a new water filtration system. Those just, I want to see children frolicking in the water. I don't want to see the electric pump that's purifying the water. So the operating revenue is important, and that's the Community Foundation does a lot with operating.
Well, it's definitely one of the eligible applications that can be made to this program. We've decided that we wanted to make both special project support and general operating money available. We completely understand that every nonprofit has to operate like a business, and so that involves having operating money. And so the option is there to apply for that operating money. There is a distinction when you apply, whether you're operating or you're applying for operating general operating money or specific projects, and that is that if you're applying for a specific project, you would need to provide a project budget. And sometimes that's easier to justify. Like you said, that could be the sexier application. But when you apply for general operating, it's more a function of, you know, what your organizational budget is. And so we ask for applicants to submit a operational budget for the year, for the current year. And so that's kind of how you communicate with our committee and tell them, this is why we need operating money. Right. And so then we have, you know, in our application, you justify what your ask is as well and what kind of impact that you're trying to make and what the community need is for your organization. And so the tone and the direction that you take in putting your application together and how you frame it, you know, really is dependent on whether you're asking for general operating money or special project support. And so what we found also over the past few years is in trying to create definitions for what, you know, your application is for, is that one organization's operating money is another one's program. You know, one small organization may only do one thing that, and they do it very well, and they often blur the lines between what their operating money and their program money is. And so we want to make sure that with this program that we make those kind of needs and grants for those needs accessible to those kind of organizations too.
Yeah, make it easy. The Community Foundation is here to serve. You've collected all this money, you've cherished this money, you've grown this money, and now it's time to disperse this money, and you want to do it to as many groups as possible. This is due by May 1st, the application, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you can apply for up to $7,500.
Correct.
And any 501c3 is eligible to do this.
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and there will be prompts on the My Community Foundation website to help you with this process. And if you have questions or you're stuck on one of the criteria, the foundation staff is there to help you.
Absolutely. Yeah. MyCommunityFoundation.org is the website. You want to go to the nonprofit menu and look at the community grants program. We're trying to put as much information, you know, and updates this year as possible on that page. But even if you have further questions, we're always available at the office to give us a call or send us an email.
Yeah, unlike my husband, their number one priority is giving money away, so not hoarding it somehow. So, Catherine, real quick before I have to let you guys go, because, gosh, we've been talking. I've lost track of time. Kent, you're very good.
Catherine, thanks.
How is the tax thing going? Because the tax thing, you know what I'm talking
Illinois
about.
Illinois Gives, yeah.
Yeah, Illinois Gives. That's it. Do you have everything you need, or do you still have some tax credits that could be given out?
Oh, absolutely. So statewide, this Illinois Gives, which is a 25% state of Illinois income tax credit to gifts to endowed funds at Illinois community foundations like ours. The cap is $5 million statewide, and statewide so far there's only been about $1 million of the credit, which means about $4 million of gifts have been made statewide. So there is still plenty of credit to go around. We've seen gifts ranging from $500 to, you know, $50,000 statewide come in. So big, little, everything in between. Absolutely take advantage of that Illinois Gives tax credit. If you want to make a difference, this is going to help create more permanent charitable funds throughout the state that are here to support our nonprofits, even when other funding sources might be more strained.
Okay, so if you hate paying taxes and you'd rather give your money to a local charity, call Catherine, and she can help you with that at the Community Foundation. It does serve West Central Illinois and Northeast Missouri, but Illinois Gives, of course, is just for West Central Illinois. Was there anything I forgot to ask?
I would just add, scholarships are also open. So if you are listening and there's a student in your life, please check out our website. Scholarship applications are open until April 1st, and they range anywhere from $500 to $5,000 this year. So
Mm-hmm. And veterans, there's a veterans scholarship
there is,
too.
There
so.
Is. Yep.
Yes, I can't remember the name.
The Girard Veterans Education. Yeah, so
they're very proud of that.
Multiple opportunities happening right now. So check out our website and share it with everyone you know who's seeking scholarships or grant funding.
Okay, I'm gonna have to think of some reason to go back to school. thank you so very much, Kent. Always
thank
good
you.
To see you.
You too, Mary.
Catherine,
thanks very much.
Never tired of seeing you, although you look like you just made a prison jailbreak, but that's okay. we'll be back. But first, we have to head up to the Hearst Farmers Cooperative and see what's happening up there. Rex Battery brings you this report.
Make sure people know it's not an orange.
We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD, and joining me in studio right now is Heath Richmond with RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program, a program of AmeriCorps. Does it still stand for Retired Senior Volunteer Program?
It's retired and senior. And
okay,
it's,
retired and senior.
Yeah, it's you don't have
one
to be retired. You just have to be 55 or older.
Okay. Well, I qualify on one of those counts. So RSVP, it's a way to match people who are 55 and older with charities in town that need help stuffing envelopes or manning a booth at an AIDS walk or the Arthritis Foundation might need to have a telethon or something. You got to answer the phone. I know the Girl Scouts, we used to use them whenever we sent out our newsletter. You know, they probably do that all electronically now. But I know that News and Views over at the Senior Center is an RSVP project because some of it is transmitted electronically, but a lot of it is still sent out snail mail. Older folks like to get something they can read in big print. And so tell us a little bit about what RSVP does.
Well, RSVP does a lot of things. It's a way for us to connect those folks 55 and older who want to give back to their community with people in the community that are needing help, nonprofit agencies, schools, even individuals can receive help and assistance from RSVP volunteers. There's really easier to tell you what they can't do. They can't do anything political. They can't do anything religious specific. They can't do anything that displaces a paid worker. And they can't count volunteer hours for a family member. So if you take your neighbor to his appointment, that's great. If you take your dad, you probably should be doing that anyway.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And I mean, again, you can volunteer at, you know, like the Catholic Charities Food Bank. You just can't proselytize and say you have to be Catholic to get the food.
Absolutely. So
here's some literature about the Pope. Right. So keep all of this separate. And basically you're working for groups and agencies that help our community in a wide variety of capacities, which you've been involved in many things in your life. Just like Kent Embry, you have a long life of service to our community. So, you know, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, all kinds of things can happen with RSVP.
Absolutely. And even some of the things we do are for individuals. So we have one of our services is called Carry Out Caravan. And it's for folks who are homebound and can't get out and get their own groceries. They call our office every Monday morning. They give us a grocery list. And on Tuesday, I have volunteers shop that at Hy-Vee and deliver their groceries for them. So, and that could be somebody who doesn't drive anymore. Maybe somebody who just had a hip replaced and I'm on rehab and I can't drive for the next 2 weeks. So we can help you out for the short term or the long term with some of our programs. And that's helping a direct individual, not necessarily an organization. So it can be from helping your neighbor to helping the Boy Scouts or helping transitions or the food pantry.
Packaging diapers.
Absolutely.
You may never see the people who you help, but you know you're helping when you work for RSVP.
Absolutely.
But Heath Richmond, here's the problem. You just handed me an application form because years ago I was registered as an RSVP volunteer, and then I fell off the registry, and now I volunteer every Wednesday. And I should be, not that I want any credit for it, but I'm going to register those hours because it's important when we do volunteer work to register with RSVP. Why?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is part of my responsibility as the director of the program is I track and catalog all those volunteer hours across the community in our three counties, Adam, Brown, and Pike. But we also, for every hour of volunteer service that we have recorded, we actually get money back into the community, and it's based on the number of hours reported. So the Illinois Department of Aging actually sends money back into the community based on the number of senior people who are doing volunteer work every month. And so last year we had over 78,000 hours of volunteer service turned in. And I think that's underreported to a tune of only about 60% of them are actually getting recorded. Because there's a lot of people like Mary who give a lot of their time, but don't think about the fact that, you know, if I just fill out a timesheet and turn it into RSVP, I can help it basically expand or amplify that service by helping other agencies as well. We also help small nonprofits who don't have a full-time staff. Some of the grants that out there right now are asking, what kind of volunteer service happens in your community? I have that data. So they can call me and I can help them provide some of that data for those grant applications to help bring even more money into the community to help those smaller nonprofits that are all volunteer run and might not have a full-time staff member that can do all that research for them.
Well, I do feel guilty because for years I recorded my RSVP hours, and it was when I was mentoring in the public schools. And I walked into the office, you had to announce yourself anyway, and then you'd sign this little sheet, and it was an RSVP sheet, and everybody who came into school that day and volunteered, RSVP would get credit if they were older and, you know, met the criteria. And when you think about it, it's not that I'm getting paid to do it, or it's not I get any extra money out of it, but if you're going to be a regular volunteer somewhere, make sure that you contact John Wood Community College and RSVP and say, hey, I need to get on your list so that I can regularly report my hours, because you'll be helping a not-for-profit agency maybe get more funding, RSVP to get more support, because there's always something that needs to be done. And
absolutely,
a lot of times these not-for-profits call RSVP because it's one-stop shopping. I can go down my church directory list and say, can you come to school today and volunteer? Can you come to school today and volunteer? But once you have a cadre of people that are already doing that, then RSVP, when you call them and say, hey, we're having a special event, we've got a newsletter to put out, or we've got senior day, and we're going to have all these vendors here, and we need people to check people in, and we need to hand out brochures, or we need to guide traffic, anything, parking, whatever. You've got the list.
We sure do. We have currently have 470 registered volunteers across the three counties, and if you have an opportunity, you contact my office. Easy to do. It's rsvp@jwcc.edu. Or you can call us at 217-641-4960. Let us know you have an event going on. I can send that message out to all 470 of my volunteers, and either they contact me and say, yes, I want to help with that, or we can have them contact you directly. They are volunteers, so that they're not always going to say, I want to do that, but somebody in that 470 people is probably interested and wants to help you, because they all want to give back to the community and keep busy and do things that make an impact.
Some of them want to do something solo or by themselves, but the vast majority of people enjoy coming together and gossiping or talking about what's new and having coffee afterwards. And a lot of these agencies that sponsor these volunteers on one or two days a month when they come in to do these big projects, they have a little hospitality for them. And
absolutely,
they provide a place for them to kind of sit, and it's not like you're on the time clock, piecemeal work, racing with the clock. I've got to get 3,000 brochures folded or I'm not going to, you know, it's not like that.
No, you mentioned News and Views earlier, and that's something the last Tuesday of every month, we have volunteers that go to the senior center, put that newsletter together. There used to be over 6,000 pieces of mail that they put together every month. They have digitized a lot of it, so it's a little over 2,000 now. But for many of those folks, the only time they see those other volunteers is that day, once a month. But they become friends, and it's a social aspect. And if somebody's missing, I'll get a phone call and say, hey, can you check on Mary? She wasn't at News and Views today. And in some cases, I know, well, Mary went to see her grandkids in Florida and is going to be gone for the next 6 weeks. Or it's somebody I can know that is normally there. I can pick up the phone and call that person and check on them. So it provides a wellness check as well for some of our seniors in the community, gives them something to do every day. And that social aspect of volunteering, I think, is a huge part that a lot of people don't think about when they first volunteer. But it becomes such an important part of volunteers, they become family with each other.
Well, and you get your little favorite agencies that you work at. And I tell you this, if you think volunteering is a burden on you, you've never volunteered for the right organization.
Right.
Because Wednesday is my best day of the week because I get to go to see my little second graders. And, you know, around here at WTAD, sometimes they make me do things I don't want to do. Can you believe that? And sometimes
work is a four-letter word, Mary.
Work is a four-letter word. And, you know, but when I go there, I know I'm helping and I know I'm appreciated. But the little kids, you know, you just can't buy that. And if you're lonely and need something to do and you can go out once a month and then they have coffee afterwards or you go out to lunch afterwards after you're done volunteering, or if you're taking Meals on Wheels up to somebody's door and you're thinking, there but for the grace of God go I. So what I'm learning is I need to have you back more often. And we also, there are a heck of a lot more than 470 volunteers in these three counties. So real quick, before I run out of time, how in the world do I get in touch with you to register and to start reporting?
Absolutely. That you can email us at rsvp@jwcc.edu or pick up the phone and call us at 217-641-4960. Those are the easiest ways to get in touch with us. Or just stop into John Wood and ask for the RSVP office. We're in the Paul Heath D building on campus, and it's a great way to put a face to a name. And
right.
So just come in and see us.
Come in, and the reason it's important, yes, all the volunteer work you do is satisfying and all of it's rewarding, but this actually has a monetary value to it. It doesn't come to you, but it comes to our county, and we need that. Thank you, Heath Richmond.
Thank you, Mary.